Today's episode is brought to you by Musical Theater Radio's merch store. Looking for that perfect gift for someone or just want to treat yourself to some great musical theater themed merch? Head to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the All Things Theater button on the homepage and check out all the different designs available. And now, today's interview. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. As you all know, I love promoting new musical theater things, be it a person or a show, or in this case of today, an album. But I also love promoting teachers because they don't always get the respect they deserve. And today, I get to talk to someone who is both a performer on the stage and in the classroom. Robert Bannon's album Rewind, live in concert at the Green Room 42, dropped on October 27th of 2023. And he is here to tell us a little bit about himself and the album. Today, before each question, though, I am going to raise my hand to make sure I am not talking out of line. So let's welcome to the show, Robert Bannon. Hello, Robert.
Oh, no. I'm going to have classroom PTSD if I see that hand go up. I'm going to say, yes, you can get a drink of water. Yes, you can go to the bathroom. Go ahead. Fine. Thank you so much for being here. Firstly, you have the greatest name in the world. I love your name.
Thank you.
It's so fancy and fun, and I love it. And secondly, thank you for taking time out and helping all of us artists get the word out about our work. It is a really wonderful thing that you do, so thank you.
Oh, no problem. You know what? I always say, you know, if we don't help each other, who will? Right?
Yes, and I appreciate that.
So all you know, a tide rises all boats. So if we all go up, you know, we'll all get better together. But this isn't about me or my name, and I will thank my parents later that you said that. Let's learn about you. So I always ask my guests in the beginning for a 30-second bio. So my question is, who is Robert in 30 seconds?
You're going to have to ask my therapist. No, who am I? I'm a teacher. I'm an artist. I'm an entertainer. I have my own show called The Roundtable, which is on the Broadway Podcast Network and on YouTube. And I have been a work in progress. I am a work in progress. I love the classroom because I feel like the classroom is a stage. I love the stage because I feel like I learn and can teach. And I think that it all goes hand in hand. Art and education is the love of my life. And I'm lucky that I get to do both of them.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Were you always into musical theater growing up, or is that something you discovered a little bit later?
I was in fifth grade when my best friend's mom said, we're going to put on a musical in my elementary school in Richfield Park, New Jersey. They cast me out of pity as the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. And I remember being so terrible and literally people giggling. I had no confidence that I went home and I told my parents, please let me have singing lessons. Please, I want to get better at this. I want to, you know, be better in my tinfoil Tin Man costume that we made. And they brought me, like all good Jersey parents do, to the Bergen Mall in Paramus, New Jersey, which is the only place they knew that had a dance or musical theater class. And I started there and I fell in love with theater and music. And then from there, I realized, allegedly, I mean, if you listen to the album, you'll make a decision upon yourself that I could kind of sing. And it very quickly moved from Paramus, New Jersey to the Harbor Conservatory in New York to the first musical theater prep class at Juilliard under Burton Rauser. I auditioned and got in without even knowing what that meant or what that was. And that was how I started my career in musical theater.
Sometimes ignorance is bliss. You don't know what you don't know. You do it, and then you realize later, oh, wow.
Yes, this is a big deal. Yes. And now I look back and think, oh my goodness, I didn't have the guts or courage to do that now. But back then, I didn't know any better. I just showed up and they said to sing and I sang.
Well, what was that like for you going in there, you know, all, you know, wide-eyed and innocent?
Well, it's so funny. Our first, Diane Wilson ran that program with Burton Rauser, and our first job was, and I've told the story before, and it shocks me to this day, was doing a tribute concert for Laura Nyro, who wrote for Streisand and wrote for Fifth Dimension, and she wrote Stony End and Stone Soul Picnic and all those songs. She passed away. We did a benefit concert for her at the Beacon Theater with Patti LaBelle, with Cyndi Lauper. I was 11 years old. I did not have stage parents. They dropped me off at the stage door. I walked inside. I did the show. My parents came. And that was my introduction to working. And I started to really work as a singer. And I really started to think this was my life. We were doing gigs all over New York City. And I mean, to the point where at that time, the governor of New York was Governor Pataki. He wrote my letter of recommendation for college. Like, I was doing so many charity events and things because of Juilliard that I thought this was going to be my big giant career. And then at 14 years old, I ended up getting a swollen knee and I had a back pain that no one could figure out what was wrong. If the symptoms progressed and got worse very quickly. And I ended up with meningitis and I was out of school and I had stopped singing and no one knew what was wrong. And it ended up being that I had Lyme disease that was undiagnosed, that was then given steroids because of the swelling, which made the Lyme disease worse, which spread to my brain to meningitis. And I was out of school for 2.5 years, in and out of treatment and Johns Hopkins in Baltimore and all over the place. Wow. And the music kind of stopped. So the career and the trajectory that I was on was just stopped very quickly. So when I was 18 and I tell this story on the album, I thought I was going to go back to doing this after taking 2.5 years of getting better. And I went on an audition. They called me in for an audition to replace a Roger in Rent on Broadway. And this is, I turned 40 on Halloween. So this is pre-YouTube, you know, Googling the lyrics. And they asked me to sing one song, Glory, in 24 hours notice. I went in, I botched all the words to the audition. And then I changed my major because I thought the time, and became a teacher, I thought that the time that I had lost really threw me off my game. And I just thought it wasn't meant for me. So I became a teacher. And that is really what happened. You asked me a very simple question with a complicated answer. So I love musical theater. I love musical theater and I love performing. But at 18 years old, I thought I was done, has been over.
Wow.
And I didn't sing again for 15 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. So did you always have the teaching bug? Was that always in the back of your mind somewhere?
You know, that's a good question. I used to swear and say I never was going to be a teacher. But I always thought that it would be a good place to be yourself and help younger people and find purpose. I knew you'd never be a millionaire. I knew I was never going to, you know, retire to St. Bart's being a teacher, but I knew that I would have purpose and it has served me very well. And I'm very grateful. And even to this day, teaching fifth grade in North Bergen, to this very moment, it affords me the opportunity to make art and it gives me the opportunity to feel inspired every day and have my bills paid. And during the pandemic, I was never more grateful than to be a teacher. But I also get my summers and the weekends so I can live in both worlds.
That's awesome. Kind of. It takes a different personality because my fiance, she's a high school teacher, teaches math. So I understand what you guys go through. I know we deviated from musical theater a little bit, but it's still performative. And, you know, you have a captive audience every day. It's not like it's a different audience every day, like in theater where you got something new. You have to entertain, for lack of a better term, these kids who've seen your show every day.
Every day. And in the teacher's defense, and I'm not trying to complain, but, you know, in this day and age, we have a lot of things that are against us. You know, there's a lot of budget cuts as teachers, a lot of contract disputes with unions. We don't have supplies. We don't always have supportive people in charge. We are parents. We are clergymen. We are psychiatrists. We are doctors. We are everything. And it's more than just teaching math or teaching the U.S. Constitution. I mean, we are, for a lot of the kids, the only show in town. I work in a town that is 93% economically disadvantaged. They have free lunch for 93% of the students, which means they make on the poverty line or below. They're first generation Americans and they need support. So it's an exhausting, fulfilling job. And I am very grateful that I get to do it. And I am very grateful that when I come home, I can distract myself by being an artist and give feed into myself so I can give out to them.
Right. So let's jump ahead. So you were 18, you decided to become a teacher. 15 years you said you hadn't sung. What was that moment that, it's time to start again?
I got divorced. I call it my straight days. During my straight days, I was married and I was very thought I was going to be, you know, white picket fence, dog house life, be a teacher. She was a teacher. And then when I got divorced, I went to therapy and my therapist was like, what do you like to do? And I had no idea. I had no answer because I really had devoted my life to, I have a principal's license. I have a master's in English. I have a master's in educational leadership. I really thought that this was all that my life was going to be. So I said, well, I used to sing and I used to act and I used to do musical theater. And she said, okay, would you ever go back to do that? And I said, I don't know. I'm 33. Who's going to want, you know, who's going to want somebody who hasn't done anything? So what ended up happening as my dog plays, see, I told you, I warned you, the dog was going to play with his toys. And so I went and I said to my brother, I'm going to go. This is a fascinating. Do we have time? Can I tell this story?
We have, it's a podcast. We have literally forever.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm going to tell it. So I went to see a lot of shows because I was alone and it was the first time I was alone. And I was like, I need to, what do I like? And I'll go see shows and I'll cry at the curtain call and I'll try to see good singers and I'll try to be inspired as an artist because I'm going to get back into it. And I went and saw a show that was playing off Broadway at Second Stage called Witness Uganda. It changed its name to Invisible Thread when it was at Second Stage. And I really was in love with this music. It inspired me. It was very big and epic. And the story was touching. It was about someone who flies to Africa to try to find who they are. And even though I didn't go to Africa to find out who I was in this self-discovery process. So afterwards, I tweeted the writers. I never have tweeted, but I didn't tweet before. I still had the default profile picture. I had no followers. I wasn't retweeting fake news and no, as people do. I just wrote to Griffin Matthews and Matt Gould and said, I saw your show and it inspired me. I wish I could do something like that. And I was brushing my teeth an hour later, going to work. And I got a ding on my phone and Griffin said, it's not about dreaming it, it's about doing it. And I sent him a message and I said, I haven't sung in 15 years. Do you know of a voice teacher? I would like to just get back to singing. And he said, my husband, Matt, will teach you. Come to our house and he'll do a lesson. So I went to their house like an idiot. Again, ignorance is bliss. And I went to their house and I brought he was like, do you have any music? And I had like a book of Alicia Keys songs. That's all I had in my house. And nothing else. And yeah. I showed up and I sung and he said, I think there's something here. And I spent a year with him every week. We wrote a show called Unfinished Business that we did in New York City, a one-man cabaret show. And then it was him who said, instead of doing summer school, why don't you go to an acting class for 6 weeks over the summer just to get back on your feet? And I ended up going to William Esper, which is my nerfing. This dog. You don't understand. I went to Meisner Conservatory for 2 years. I ended up going and getting a full conservatory degree, all because of Matt. Now Matt's show Olympica opens on Broadway next year, and it's going to be amazing. And it's all really thanks to them. If I did not tweet them and they didn't tweet me back, I don't know. I wouldn't have made an album. I wouldn't have done any theater again. I wouldn't have done any television. And I definitely would not be talking to you. So I really owe that crazy story. And for people out there, my first album is called Unfinished Business and my show was called Unfinished Business because I feel very strongly that my message is that everybody has something that they're scared to do. You started this. And the first day you did it, people must have thought, what are you doing? You must have even had, maybe you had self-doubt. Like, who am I? What am I going to, who's going to listen? And that one step is a path that leads us somewhere. So if there's something you're afraid to do out there, just take the step.
There are so many stories I have when I'm doing interviews that they're exactly the same. It's people who are afraid, but then they do it. And then what happens is incredible. And where they go is fantastic. So congratulations on saying yes and just reaching out and doing that. Because don't worry about the dog. The dog, if it happens, it happens.
Terror. He's a terror.
No. I believe 87% of our listeners like dogs. So that'll be fine. They'll be happy. Yeah, I don't know about the right. Other 13%.
87% of them love dogs. We love this. This is an amazing dog. He is.
Oh, man. So you did Unfinished Business and you got back into the industry. So did you do a lot of theater? Because North Bergen is not far, obviously, from New York City. It's right there.
Yeah, so I did. I did. I started back just doing like regular old community theater, and then before, you know, I did The Wedding Singer, and I did the premiere community production of We Will Rock You and played Galileo, and then I started getting real gigs. I finally did Rent regionally. I did Summer Stock. I did The Music Man up in Sharon, Connecticut. I toured with My Big Gay Italian Wedding for years from all across the East Coast and South, you know, Florida, etc. And I started to really do a lot of shows. I got my equity card and did like awful theater at in universities and awful like awful shows. And then I really fell into really loving cabaret and really loving storytelling and really loving not having to listen to a director and a music director and a choreographer. When 54 Below asked me to do my first show, the Unfinished Business show, I met Robbie Rozelle, and Robbie Rozelle, who is A&R director of Broadway Records and his own cabaret star and producer extraordinaire, he said to me, "I think you're a better singer and more fun than this show, and I would like to help you." And we wrote Rewind. And when I did it originally, I said to him, "I think this would be a good live album because it's my story growing up, and you get my personality, and you get some of these ridiculous songs that you don't hear in a lot of, you know, I don't want to do all that jazz cabaret show, which is nothing wrong with that, but for me, it was more like I wanted the songs to really tell a story, but I want them to be different and unique. So if you were like divas and you want to hear Dolly Parton and Whitney Houston, and this is the music that I grew up listening to, I wanted it on the album." Or in the show. So I said to him, "We're going to do it again and I want to record it." And he said, "But how many nights are we going to do the show?" And I said, "One." And he said, "You're going to pay for them to hit record on this button and mix and master it, and you're going to have one shot to get it right." And I said, "Yeah," because I know people usually do two or three nights and they cut it and make it. But I said, "I don't think that many people want to come and see me. And I also think that I would just like to give it one shot. And if it doesn't work, what do I have to lose? What do we have to lose?" And what you hear is one night's show. That's it. It is one take, it is one night. And what you get on the album is that one show.
But you know what? When I go into the theater, all I get is that one show as well. And I have to decide whether I like it or don't like it or whatever happens, happens. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is pure real life. So
That's life, right?
great.
If you bought a ticket, or I came to see, if I go see a Broadway show tonight, whatever happens on that stage is what happens on that stage. So we cut one song because I botched lyrics, and I didn't want it to be inauthentic. You know, they said to me, "We could go into the studio, we could punch it, we could make it sound," and I said, "No, we're just gonna give it the way that it is. So you get it as real as it can be." So it would be like you were sitting in Green Room 42 with me, and I'm really excited and proud that it's out, and I hope people have some fun.
That's awesome. So obviously you had so many songs to choose from. You probably had to answer this, but how do you choose it? What did you cut down? Not like cut out of the show like you botched, but you must have had like hundreds of songs. How do you pare it down to those 10?
You know, it's super hard because I let the story drive the songs. There are songs that I like to sing that I think I sound good singing that don't make the album because there's just no place for them. They don't make sense. I am a self-described little bit of a Fanilo, obsessed Manilow fan. He is the reason why I wanted to sing. I got a karaoke machine when I was 10, and it had a demo CD in it, and one of the songs was Mandy, and I thought, "What the hell is this song?" I loved it because it was dramatic, and my parents are not into the Fanalone-ness of it at all. And I was begged them to go to Radio City to see him do his Summer of 78 tour when he put out his album of covers. And I wanted to do a tribute to Manilow, and I went to Yasuf Gogolba, who's the music director, and Robbie, and I said, "I want to do a Manilow medley." And they said, "Okay, what song or two?" And I said, "No, I have eight. I have eight songs." And they said, "Okay." And I said, "And then I want to do the song from Harmony, their new show." And Robbie said, "You're going to do eight Manilow song medley and then another Manilow song?" And I said, "Yes." And that is why I love working with them, because they let me do these things. But I grew up in Jersey, so I loved Whitney, and Elton John was the first concert I saw. And my grandmother, Virginia DiMeglio in Fort Lee, New Jersey, loved Liza and Frank Sinatra. So we do Liza on the album. I tell my Rent story and I sing Rent. And I, you know, I talk about working and I sing Dolly Parton and I sing that. It's really the songs drove the story. And for musical theater fans, I wrestle with this. You know, I have the privilege now of having a yearly show for Pride at 54 Below. We did it the first year last year. We'll be back in June and every year, hopefully, God willing, thereafter. And I don't do a lot of musical theater music in my cabaret shows. We did one show during the Pride show, one song for the Pride show. One song is in this album that's a musical theater song. I am a very, I like taking pop music and making it sound like cabaret or musical theater. I like taking, you know, I have a Christmas show coming up in New York at Chelsea Table and Stage December 9th. And there's a diva medley of Christmas music that's 12 songs. That I just like taking songs I should not sing and figuring out a way to make them work.
Yeah. That's hilarious. I'm always curious. Take it back. Is your family into theater? Are they musical type people, or are they, you know, you are the black sheep, for lack of a better term, of the family?
I was shot out of a glitter cannon. I don't know what happened. My mother loves music and my father loves music. They are good music listeners. My brother loves music. He took piano lessons because he thought he was going to be a performer. I think he lasted a week and a half. My father will sing in the car. Mm-hmm. My mother know the lyrics to songs. They were not show parents. They did not know how to take me on an audition, but they were supportive. And when I loved musical theater, my parents would save their money and take us to see a show once a month across the bridge from Ritual Park. To see a Broadway show, they would buy the poster. We would hang them up on the wall. Like, they were very much into, if this is what you want, they never discouraged me. And that is really allowed me to feel comfortable and free. My brother slept through the best shows of the 90s. If it was King and I, Sean was just snoozing away and whatever, but no matter what happened, they supported me. So they do not sing. They do not perform. My parents are in the last row in the corner in the dark. They do not want the attention. They do not want any of it. And I am like, yes, give it all. Where's the spotlight? Let's go.
But you know what? Support is so important. So, you know, just having somebody get in your back, even if they're not into that sort of thing. And that makes such a difference. And, in your career, in your life.
It made all the difference. And I've spoken to so many people who are performers who don't have support or who do not have parents who my parents were never like that. I have put them on quite the roller coaster ride. I am a little circus, and they have, they have sat, you know, front row for the whole thing.
So when you were putting together the album Rewind, obviously it was a one-shot take. Did you do anything afterwards with any editing, or is it kind of you handed it off to them and it was there?
We edited down some of the speaking. We cut some of the repetitiveness. We cut out some of the words. I tell a story about my first date and I used her name. Yes. And I felt I cut a little bit of that personal stuff out. I'm not here to get sued, but I am. We tinkered with the levels and everything to make the band sound as good as we can. And my voice sound as good as we can. It's not auto-tuned like a T-Pain hip hop album where I sound, but it is a little tinkered with to make it sound as crisp and clean as possible. Yeah. But no, it is pretty authentically it. We tried versions where the talking was cut out, was very limited. And, it just didn't tell the story. It'd be like, why the hell is he singing this song then? So we kept the little bit of the story on. And my friend Mike said to me when he listened to the album, he said that your album came out and I put it on Spotify and I hit to put it on shuffle because I wanted to listen. He's like, don't listen to it on shuffle because you tell a story about Liza Minnelli and your grandmother. And then all of a sudden it plays a Dolly Parton song. So it is really an album in the way that it used to be, where if you listen to it from beginning to end, you'll get the story.
This is the type of album that could be on an LP, and because you just start at the beginning and you roll right through.
Sorry. So you don't want to shuffle. It will make no sense.
So are you going to put it in an LP? No.
They want me to. They asked me to. That'd be awesome. And I know they're so popular and back in style, and I love the record. I love the idea of the record. Who knows? There's more music coming. You know, I'm going to the studio on Saturday for a Christmas single, and we'll have a Christmas album next year. And I have some tricks up my sleeve. So be on the lookout for some more music as life goes on.
Do you own a record player?
I do own a record player. I have all my grandmother and my mother's old records. And I'm not like at the store buying. I don't buy new records per se, but I love going back and listening to the albums that my grandmother and grandfather listened to, or my mom listened to, and these classic albums, and looking at the liner notes and looking at the artwork. I think as a kid, when I was working, I used to work at the John Harm Center for the Arts in Englewood, New Jersey. It's now Bergen Pack, and it used to be a 1400 seat performing arts center. I sold tickets, and there was a Coconuts Records around the corner. So when I would get paid on Friday, I would cash my check at the bank and I would go to Coconuts and buy a CD. And I would love to read the liner notes and where they recorded and who did they thank and what was the artwork like. And I think that's the set. I love that in my phone, I could have every song in the entire universe, but I miss the details and the information that used to exist on albums and CDs and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we're of a certain age. Like, there's I don't know what age the cutoff is who stopped buying CDs and LPs and stuff like that. But yeah, you had the liner notes. You could look at them. You open it up. You got all the information. You were just bombarded with song after song after song without context. It was so nice. You had to physically do stuff. I miss those
Absolutely.
days.
Me too. And I still think about, I still will now go on whatever app you use to listen to your music, and I will still click song credits because I want who wrote the song, who's on. I still am a nerd like that. I still love to keep up with who's out here doing the work.
And I'm gonna assume you have Barry Manilow LPs.
Of course. I
I
mean,
just I thought so. No, I just had to test
I
to
have a
see.
Barry Manilow pillowcase. I have a Barry Manilow bobblehead. I have a Barry Manilow jewelry box. I have a Barry Manilow everything.
Have you seen Harmony?
I am going to see Harmony on the 14th,
Okay.
and I am very excited to see it. And I have watched and listened to this journey for 108 years. I always, he's had a lot of faces since he started writing this show, but they are. And I'm happy it's up and out. And I'm so excited for the actors who are making their Broadway debut. I think there's something like 12 people who are making their Broadway debut in the
Wow.
show, and that's what's really cool about it.
That is awesome. So what have you've talked a little bit about what you got going on in the future, but what else do you have? What's in the pipeline for you?
December 9th, like I said, in Chelsea Table and Stage, Santa's coming. There's Kevin Smith Kirkwood, who does a classic Whitney at the Joe's Pub, was the star of Kinky Boots, is coming to sing with me, and Robbie Rozelle is coming to sing with me as well. And we're doing a holiday show, the first one I ever did in New York. And there's a Christmas single coming out on the 8th. Don't Save It All for Christmas Day. So there's more music that's on its way. And I already have my date set for Pride in June 14th. If you want to celebrate, if you're part of the LGBT community or an ally, come party it up, wear glitter and rhinestones and rainbow face paint and listen to me sing diva music. And I am on the round table on YouTube weekly, almost daily, doing interviews. It all started during the pandemic, when I really felt like I needed a creative outlet, and it just took off and it continues there. And I love, just like you, to talk to artists and see what makes them think, and to get to know people. I'm so curious about human behavior, so and what makes people do what they do. So you can find all of that, as I shamelessly plug myself, at robertbannon.com, or on Instagram it's Robert M. Bannon, because someone in Idaho took my Instagram name and I'm not going to get over it. I'm upset. So now it's the M for my middle name, and it's now Robert M. Bannon. So find me and say hey.
And if they talk to somebody in Iowa or Idaho?
Idaho.
Idaho. Those Idahoans.
You know,
Idahoans? I don't know what they call them.
I we see we don't even know what to call them, but I love the people in Idaho who, but if you know him, ring his doorbell and tell him that, I'll send him a cake. I don't know. What does he want? Flowers? Robert Bannon, what are you doing with my Instagram handle?
Yeah, but you know what? We know who you are now. The M is what makes you distinctive from everything
Okay,
else.
fine.
So
Fine. You know, there's
we want to
like
keep
Michael
it.
B. Jordan. Like,
Exactly.
okay.
There we go. We know who you are. We don't want to lose you. No, if you go to the other one, we may lose the trail and lose
Okay.
all the stuff. So
No, what Robert M. Bannon on Instagram, say hi. Yes.
awesome. Robert, congratulations on the album. It sounds great on everything you've done. Also on the teaching. I love that you're supporting the students, helping them along. And yeah, Where can people hear the show? I mean, the album.
You can listen to wherever you listen to music. So if it's Spotify, Amazon, Apple, you can go to robertbannon.com and there's a link that will send you to every single streaming platform in the entire universe. And we make art now, and I'm not trying to like boohoo for me. We pay money to make art and albums and mix and master them. And we do not make that money back. This music is really given away for free from our heart. So if you stream and share this music, it means a lot to an independent artist like myself that you can just listen. So I appreciate everybody who picks up a phone and listens. And I hope that there's something in it that you can relate to. And I want to thank people like you, Jean-Paul, because it's without you, we wouldn't get the word out. And you spend your time and energy and resources to help us out. And that means the world to people like me. So thank you so much. It's such an honor to be here with you.
It's my pleasure. Yeah. And I've added songs to the playlist here. So it's always in the rotation. We got some of your stuff playing. So, and if you're listening on the radio right after, stick around because we're going to be playing a couple of songs from the album on the radio when it airs.
I apologize in advance. There you go. That's it. You were all right.
Well, Robert, again, great talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on and congratulations.
Anytime. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. All right. We were just speaking with Robert M. Bannon about the new album he released October 27th, 2023, Rewind. So check that out on all the places that stream music. Also, obviously, on the radio station. Listen for that. Tune in next week as we'll speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion. That is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Jovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.